Coming up on Fronteras, one of the nation's biggest school districts is coping with growing pains after another year of record enrollment numbers.
33 fifth graders in a portable, it is some very tight space.
The solution is not ideal. The growth of meatpacking plants in the rural Midwest has created an unforeseen challenge: children in need of food, housing, and education.
School terms, simple directions that they will need in a classroom, you know, how to put away your book, what is the pencil, what is the notebook. I'll say go to the door. They don't know what the door is.
A series looking into the lives of immigrant families in the meatpacking industry. Next on Fronteras, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. This year, Nevada's Clark County School District once again faced record enrollment numbers. It's one of the biggest and fastest-growing school districts in the country. The district added over 3,000 new students this year, as well as a new program to boost English language learners. To cope with their growing pains, the district has put more and more children into portable classrooms. From our Fronteras desk in Las Vegas, Kate Sheehy reports.
Billy Ann Watanabe teaches a lively bunch of fifth graders, 33 to be exact. She says it's a challenge trying to control noise in this trailer on the blacktop playground at Ronzoni Elementary. Nearly half of the kids at this school are in portable classrooms.
I do have several very chatty students, and it's kind of hard to move them away from another chatty student when there's only so many places they can go and so many places that they can sit in the classroom.
In a rather narrow, windowless room, there's little extra space for anything more than students at their desks. Watanabe says she got rid of her own desk to make more room. And she says there are other issues besides the lack of space.
When it rains, the portables leak. That's not enjoyable.
Last year, she said the leaks caused mold and her ceiling tiles had to be replaced. She's also had two lights out for quite some time, and without windows, missing light bulbs make the classroom, frankly, pretty dim. Across Clark County School District, about 20% of elementary school children are in portable classrooms, and that's not that unusual. At another nearby giant, the Los Angeles Unified School District, the number is an estimated 30%.
We see it all over the country that the school facilities piece tends to be, you know, thought of as very secondary.
Mary Filardo is the executive director of the 21st Century School Fund, a nonprofit that advocates for leadership and innovation in school facility issues.
You know, the fact that you need to respond to the demand and that you can't do it, so you're doing it with portables, is probably a pretty short-sighted approach.
Portables are not a bad temporary solution, she says, but too often they become a permanent part of school facilities.
Building a new school is not really a feasible option for the district right now. We just simply have the funds.
That's James McIntosh. He's the interim chief financial officer for the Clark County School District. He says one reason for Las Vegas's classroom crunch is the district's new plan to address English language learning at some of the most heavily impacted schools. The ELL population in the district grew by more than 200% between 1998 and 2008 and continues to grow. The new program sets a cap on student-teacher ratios for kindergarten at 21 to 1. That means more teachers and more classrooms at already crowded schools.
Some of those programs have mandated class sizes that are much smaller than what the design capacity of the building is. So because of that, many times that's why we require portables.
Ronzoni is typical of many other schools here that rely on a high number of portable classrooms. More than 50% of kids at Ronzoni speak English as a second language, and more than 70% of the students depend on free and reduced lunches. For many educators, portables are a fair trade-off if it means more teachers and smaller class sizes. Still, portables take up playground space and can limit teachers' creativity. Rebecca Chinkle is the principal at Ronzoni.
my intermediate teachers are looking to do some activities that are outside the box, doing some activities that get students out of their seats, engages them into the learning.
But she says a portable full of fifth graders leaves little room for moving around.
And it becomes very difficult to do that in a classroom when they have that many bodies in there.
Chinkle says the campus itself is nearly out of room and can't house many more portables. What's left? The trees.
We did joke about having treehouse classrooms. I mean, I think that would be wonderful.
But for now, portables seem to be the only solution. The school district says it's planning on adding 100 more portables over the next 2 years. In Las Vegas, I'm Kate Sheehy.
For centuries, immigrants in search of a better life have settled in America's largest cities. Now, thanks in part to the meatpacking industry, small rural towns have become a key frontier for new arrivals. These small towns, however, struggled to provide the social services needed by such a diverse population, a population largely invisible to most Americans. In this first of three reports on children living in the shadows of the slaughterhouse, Abby Fentress Swanson of Harvest Public Media visits two schools in Noel, Missouri, population 1832, that are struggling to provide much more than instruction.
R-O-D.
R-O-D, right? No silent E on the end. Very good. Go ahead and fill that
in. It's 9 in the morning at Noel Primary School, and a group of Hispanic students are completing English language exercises. Except for Isaac Martinez. Teacher Aaron McPherson asks the 9-year-old what's wrong.
And Isaac. You with me? You awake this morning, baby?
Not really.
What's wrong?
I grew up yesterday.
You grew up last night? You go to the doctor?
No.
As is often the case at Noel Primary, the teacher is part social worker. Most of the parents of the 220 kids here are immigrants and refugees who moved to Noel to work at the Tyson Slaughterhouse. For rural Missouri, plant jobs pay decent wages that start at $9.05 an hour. Still, 90% of these students qualify for free and reduced meals. Since Noel isn't much more than a main street, the nearest food pantry and free clinic are miles away. In effect, Noel's schools have become the safety net for children whose parents work at the plant. Here's Principal Deborah Pearson.
We talk about frostbite. We have a dentist come into our school, and they actually check every child in the building, and they do cleanings once a year. Glasses are a big thing here. We do whatever we can to support these people.
Although this town has been dubbed the Christmas City and canoe capital of the Ozarks, Noel is actually thriving because of the chicken plant. It employs almost 1,500 people. Hispanics, most of them Mexican, came to work at the plant in the 90s. Pacific Islanders and refugees from parts of Africa and Myanmar followed.
Ahora vamos a las partes del cuerpo. Esta es la mano.
7 languages, from Arabic to Spanish, are spoken here, and there's hardly enough space to teach the school's 100-plus English as a second language learners. Translator Trini Cerna has found a quiet corner near the principal's office to help 5-year-old Michelle Montero Jimenez.
¿Cómo se llama la cabeza? Repite. Head. Estos son los ojos.
We are the government agency in town. People come here if they need shoes, if they need clothes, if they're hungry. We send 37 backpacks home every weekend with kids that just don't have enough food.
In her office at Noel Elementary on the other side of town, Principal Angie Brewer says about half of her students are Hispanic, and immigration issues, like parents being deported, have become part of the school day.
We have actually had, last year, we had 3 families come in the next day. Their dad was gone in the night.
Tyson says it takes its responsibility to the community very seriously. The company has given 40,000 pounds of meat to food banks in the area since 2000. In August, it donated $35,000 to feed the school district's neediest families. Tyson's Burmese and Somali translators help enroll children in school. Brewer is grateful for the assistance, but she says it's the work of the dynamic group of teachers here that will really make the difference for these children.
No one's going to fall through a crack in Noel, Missouri. It's not going to happen. I mean, some of these are my own children's friends, and these are my friends. They're real people, and they deserve the best.
For Somali newcomers, Noel has been particularly challenging. Tires on more than a dozen of their cars were recently slashed. Somalis say they are not welcome at Kathy's Country Kitchen, a local diner where servers wear T-shirts saying, "I got caught eating at the KKK."
When you find yourself, as a family especially, in a place
that is pretty remote and hasn't recently been used to welcoming immigrants, you may feel pretty lost.
That's University of Missouri education professor Lisa Dorner. She says schools are often the first places immigrants go for help when they arrive in towns like Knoll.
So a lot of schools in towns like this, they do become an integrative force, if you will. They become the place where a family can find things out. And they often find out those things then filtered through the children.
Bureau of Labor Statistics data show there are more than 100 meatpacking plants across the country with at least 1,000 employees. Dorner believes that children in these towns have a good chance of succeeding. By acting as guides for their families in America, they become bilingual and self-sufficient. At the housing project next to Knoll Elementary, 13-year-old Mohammed Hassan is playing soccer with friends. He's from Somalia, but this has been home for the past 2 years since his parents started working at Tyson. And Mohammed says he likes Knoll.
When I first came, I didn't know any English, but now I do a lot. I learned at this school, and I'm going to say to them thank you.
There soon may be many more thank yous. Tyson is hiring, and housing is going up quickly to make room for an expected influx of Burmese refugees who will work at the plant. That means Knoll school classrooms will soon get a little more crowded. Abby Fentress-Swanson, Harvest Public Media.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. The next story in our series on children of immigrant workers in the meatpacking industry. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. As we heard in the last segment, the growth of meatpacking plants in the rural Midwest has created an unforeseen challenge. Immigrant children in need of food, housing, and education. In the second of Harvest Public Media's series, In the Shadows of the Slaughterhouse, Peggy Lowe reports from Garden City, Kansas, where city leaders have built a strong grassroots network that has embraced their town's cultural change and its youngest citizens.
Sister Janice Thome apologizes for her gringa Spanish and is welcomed into the Hernandez home. Like most days, Sister Janice is working out of her office, a 2003 brown Ford Focus with a backseat piled high with paperwork and a prayer book. She drives around this meatpacking town out on the plains of southwest Kansas, delivering furniture here, paying a utility bill there, teaching classes. Today she stops to talk to Elizabeth, a 16-year-old whose father has worked at the Tyson beef plant as long as she's been alive. Elizabeth, her brothers, and her mother, Maria, joined him here from Mexico 10 years ago. She translates for her mom.
Y decidimos, más bien nos dieron la oportunidad de poder arreglar.
Yeah, the reason that we came was because they gave us the opportunity, you know, to get our papers and have the opportunity to come over here and stay with them.
Elizabeth talks a lot about opportunity, which she says was in short supply in Mexico. Her family has done well in Garden City, thanks to her father taking lots of overtime at La Planta and her mother's job at the high school. And that's often true for many of the more established families here, the immigrants and refugees who have streamed into town since the first beef packing plant was built here were lured by the promise of steady, if brutally hard, work and a better life. Garden City welcomed these newcomers, building a well-organized network of social services, offering English classes, food banks, job help, shelters, and a refugee center. Sister Janice.
That's kind of the ambience that we walked into when I came in 96, is this whole set of people that say, okay, who's here is here, and these are their needs, and what can we do to answer them?
And that surprised you?
Well, it's the first time I've ever met that kind of thing.
Since 1980, the newcomers have doubled the population to roughly 30,000 and have turned a white cow town into a cultural crossroads where minorities are the majority. Still, despite all the services the local network provides, there are problems endemic to any place with lots of workers who make low wages.
You guys are awesome.
Over at the school district offices, the weekly food bank delivery arrives. The starting pay at the Tyson plant is $13.50 an hour, better than a job at, say, Walmart for $7 an hour. But it's still difficult to support a family. The district provides two meals a day and sends supplies home for the weekend. Requests for food stamps are up 230% in the last 5 years, and three-quarters of the students get free or reduced lunch. Here in Kay Thompson's class, there are 14 kids who speak four languages: Vietnamese, Burmese, Somali, and Spanish. She starts with the basics.
School terms, simple directions that they will need in a classroom. You know, how to put away your book, what is the pencil, what is the notebook. I'll say, go to the door. They don't know what the door is.
This is called wagon wheel. And you can see that it includes some very halfway decent trailers, but also some very sketchy ones.
Sister Janice drives by one of the many mobile home parks on the outskirts of town. She says the biggest challenge here is housing. More than 4% of the school kids were homeless last year. They stay with family members bunched up in small apartments, or they camp out at the many rundown motels, which are closer to the dusty cattle feedlots at the edge of town. Far from those feedlots is Garden City's Main Street, a pretty line of well-tended homes and storefronts. Some 10 years ago, Tyson was asked to help the city pay for a statue of children of different cultures playing. The company declined, saying the beef business wasn't making money at the time. But as Tyson continues to recruit refugees and their families here, they will be met as Garden City always greets its newest citizens. After all, the city's logo is a yucca with a rainbow of colors signifying its many cultures, along with its motto, "The world grows here." Peggy Lowe, Harvest Public Media.
Some of these kids we've been hearing about are hoping to achieve the American dream, to go on to college and get jobs outside the meatpacking industry. Peggy Lowe and Abby Fentress Swanson have this final report as part of our series from Harvest Public Media.
On this warm fall morning, two young women, Bin Hua and Mai Nguyen, are in a chemistry lab at the Garden City Community College campus. Both are wearing protective goggles, their long black hair pulled back into ponytails, and they're ready when the teacher brings the class to order.
All right, busters, good morning. It's 8:59, so we'll go ahead and start the math.
These Vietnamese 18-year-olds don't look like Bronc Busters, or Busters, the college mascot, a reflection of this Old West town's history of raising cattle. But they have both benefited from the beef industry since their parents settled here to work in the Tyson meatpacking plant. These best friends are on a fast track, completing high school in 3 years, hoping for associate degrees next year, and then on to a university.
We really like to graduate early because we think high school wasn't challenging enough, and we was looking for a challenging courses and stuff. And plus, like, each year you get 8 credits, and you need only 26 and a half credits to graduate. We went ahead and graduate early. Just to reward ourselves with more college. Yeah, and we get a head start in college.
Bin and Mai are the newest chapter in an age-old American story. Since the days of the jungle, immigrants have fueled the factories of the U.S. meatpacking industry. Here in Garden City, Bin's folks both work the late shift, her father on the hot, bloody kill floor, her tiny mother using a sharp knife to cut the hulks of beef. Bin knows it's a sacrifice.
My mom and dad just always said that I'm doing this for you.
Don Stull is a University of Kansas anthropologist who has studied Garden City and other meatpacking towns for 3 decades. He says the slaughterhouse has always offered new Americans a platform for upward mobility.
Certainly in the second generation, the children of those workers often, because of the hard work of their parents, are able to go to college and then establish careers that don't require them to labor as hard in such a distasteful environment as their parents did.
Statistics point, of course, to the increasing diversity and poverty of meatpacking towns. But government agencies don't track the children of these slaughterhouse workers. We do know their legal status can make a difference. Refugee kids have a ready path to citizenship. And immigrant children who have attained citizenship have many more options than the undocumented. Reporter Abby Fentress Swanson saw that firsthand when she met up with some of the kids who may stay in the shadows.
Hopefully I get good drivers.
Tonight in Knoll, Missouri, an 18-year-old high school senior with a slight mustache and glasses is doing laundry. His name is Oscar, and we won't share his last name because he is undocumented. Oscar was born in Mexico and brought here by his mom without papers when he was 2. Outside the laundromat, Oscar talks to me about his future and why the local Tyson plant, where his mom worked deboning chicken, is not the place for him.
Every time she came home, her feet were hurt, her hands were hurt, her back were hurt. It got me sad because she was in pain.
His stepdad worked at the plant too, up until he lost 4 fingers in a machine accident. Still, Oscar's parents suggested he could get a job at the plant.
But I told them, no, I heard of things about you always wake up hurt, you don't wake up right, basically. So that's why I'm working in the restaurant. I'd rather work in a restaurant than a chicken plant anytime.
We have a little joke in the classroom that is called, "You're going to the University of so-and-so," without saying the name of the poultry plant.
Alive Espinosa, who herself emigrated here from Mexico, teaches English as a second language at Oscars High School.
"Are you going to the University of this other plant name?" So I said, "It is a good choice, but I think you can do better than that. Your parents are already doing the hard labor. It is up to you to do better."
But college is not an easy option for undocumented students because most applications and financial aid forms require a Social Security number. Here's McDonald County High Principal Greg Leach.
We have teachers every year that are brokenhearted because they have this student in class that has so much talent and so much ability, and now they're going to go work in the poultry industry because they can't get into college. It's nothing against the poultry industry. It's just the fact that these kids have so much more potential, but they can't go anywhere with it.
Leach says they encourage their students without papers to apply for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival Status, or DACA, partly because it allows most applicants to attend college legally for 2 years. Immigration reform advocates want Congress to pass the DREAM Act, which would provide a path to legal status for many young immigrants. But the time is now for Oscar. He plans to apply for DACA status, and his dream is to one day be a mechanic.
I've been trying to be an optimistic person, always trying to see the glass half full. Right after high school, I will be the first of my family to go to college. That's what motivates me right now, to finish high school and everything.
That's what these kids of meatpacking workers are hoping for, a shot at the American dream and a move out of the shadows of the slaughterhouses that paved their way here. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Abby Fentress-Swanson, along with Peggy Lowe.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. We're online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversation and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter at Fronteras Desk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. This theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.